This morning I want to continue talking about saving for retirement. And the big takeaway from today's sermon, if I could just summarize it in like one sentence, would be don't stop working until you have enough saved to live off for the rest of your life and the rest of your wife's life. That's what I'm going to be talking about today, and I have some principles in the scripture here that are going to back this up. If you remember last time, we left off talking about how much we should have saved for retirement, and I said $500,000 at a minimum by age 70, and that was based on $3,000 per month at living 20 years at 4% interest, not including inflation, not including a lot of stuff. Truly, I think this would be a good goal to have, and you may think this is crazy, but your goal should be $1 million in the bank by the time you retire. Now, you may think that's nuts. Like, how could I ever become a millionaire? Depending on your age. I mean, some people, obviously, if you're old, that's not going to happen. But young people easily can become a millionaire in today's world, in the United States, just by simply being frugal, staying out of debt, paying off your house in 15 years, and investing 15% of your gross income over the course of your life into mutual funds, index funds, into the stock market. It averages 10 to 12% per year, and very easily. I just got another book, Dave Ramsey's The Baby Steps Millionaires, and I mean, he has literally seen thousands and thousands of normal, everyday people, teachers, just normal people, normal salaries, retiring millionaires, and long before they retire. You'd be amazed at what compound interest will do if you just start early and just regularly, consistently put 15% of your income. Any person literally can become a millionaire. And that would definitely give you enough money to take care of you for the rest of your life. But what I want to get into, one thing today, is how much does somebody that's already retired, how much does that person need to have saved up? And I'm going to make the case that you should have $250,000 saved up if you're already retired. Now, you might think, well, why is that? Why would I need it? Why would I need that? I'm on Social Security. That's the reason why you'll need it, because you're on Social Security. And I'm going to make that case. And it's just going to be with some basic, simple math. So you don't want to stop working until you have at least that much saved up. So I want to exhort you to follow the example of the ants and work hard to lay up for the future while you still can during the spring, summer, and harvest times of life, so that when the winter time of life comes, you're not going to be a burden on others. Turn to Proverbs chapter 6:6-8. Proverbs 6:6-8. And really, what I'm saying in this sermon, this is nothing new. I've been saying this for 10 years. I mean, I remember in Minneapolis saying the exact same thing. Don't retire until you have $300,000 or $400,000 in the bank. And I said that at least a couple of times. I moved down here in 2018, did the sermon on hard times are coming, get prepared. Same thing, keep working. Don't stop working until you have enough money to live off of. I mean, this is nothing new. But some of the details that I'm going to give you and the reasons why are new. I haven't talked about them before, but the conclusion is not new. I've been saying this forever. Proverbs 6:6-8. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. The ant lays up. The ant starts preparing in the summertime. That's what it is to provide. And then the ant lays up throughout the harvest. And then when the winter time comes, the anthill is full of provision, and then the ant can survive through the winter period until the next spring. The ant does this without a guide, without an overseer, or without a ruler. Nobody is breathing down the ant's neck saying, you better get out there and work, you better lay up, you better get that anthill full before harvest. The ant's just smart enough to know, winter's coming. There's a time when I'm not going to be able to work anymore. I'm not going to be able to gather anymore. I've got to do it now so that I have enough when winter comes. The ant just knows that. And we ought to know it too. It's not exactly rocket science or brain surgery, is it? The ant provides for her necessities. To provide is to prepare, get ready, or arrange something beforehand. This definition is cited in Coverdale's Bible, which was one of the Bibles previous to the King James, and it cites this very verse, Proverbs 6 and verse 7, as a usage of this definition. So to provide is to prepare. So the ant prepares, gets ready, and arranges things in the summertime. That's why I say it's important to start early, and I'll get to this later, spring, summer, harvest, winter, times of life. But it's important to start early. And I wish I would have, I told you my story. I mean, I started saving money really early. But if I would have not been listening to certain people and been listening to other people and been investing where I should have and just done, honestly, just done the normal thing, I'd be far ahead now as to where I am now. So anyway, I've changed my philosophy a little bit. I went from being normal to being kind of way out there to going back to being closer to normal, now. And I have some reasons for that, and I'll explain that to you. I'm not totally normal. But when it comes to investing, I think sometimes just the old tried and true methods without following all the contrarian sometimes is maybe your best bet. But anyway, I'll get to all that when I'm talking about investing later. To provide also means to equip or fit out a person, etc., with what is necessary for a certain purpose. To furnish or supply with something implied. To provide or furnish with lodging. Now, the Bible tells us that if any provides not for his own, and especially for they of his own house, that he's worse than an infidel, that he hath denied the faith. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. So this idea of providing for you and your own is serious business. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. It's not the government's job to provide for you. It's not society's job to provide for you. It's not your family's job to provide for you. It's not the church's job to provide for you. It's not anybody's job. It's not your employer's job to provide for you. It's nobody's job to provide for you but your own. You must provide for yourself and your family. But at least half of the people in this country are not doing that. They're not providing for themselves and their families, but are relying on the government to do so in one way or the other. Here's a quote from an article called Who Receives Government Benefits in Six Charts from the Washington Post in September of 2012. It's a bit dated, and I assume the numbers are worse now than they were then. In 2011, about 49% of the population lived in a household where at least one member received a direct benefit from the federal government. A big chunk of these households are retirees, and about 27% households, probably should be of households, I suppose, about 27% of households benefited from a means-tested poverty program. So over a quarter of the households are on some kind of assistance, some kind of food stamps, some kind of welfare, and just about fully half, 49% of people, are receiving some kind of a check from the federal government. Half of all households. That was, you know, quite a few years ago, 13 years ago. I'm sure it's not any better now. It's likely grown worse. But the ant is not like that. The ant's not getting a check from anybody. The ant provides her meat by herself. Meat is food in general, anything used as nourishment for men or animals, usually solid food in contradistinction to drink. So the ant provides her own food. The ant works to eat, and so must we. That's what the Bible teaches. If you want to eat, you must work. 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 10. 2 Thessalonians 3. You must either work to buy the food and consume it in the immediate, or you must work and lay up to be able to buy the food later. The ant eats during the summertime because she works during the summertime, but then the ant eats during the wintertime because she laid up during the harvest. That's why she has the right to eat, because she laid up in store. 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 10. For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. Now, pay close attention to the wording there. It doesn't say if any cannot work. It says if any would not work, the past tense of will. If any will not work, could work, but won't work, that person should not eat. See, the link between working and eating has been broken in this country for a long time. And that's one of the main reasons this country is broken and broke, both. Because the Bible teaches that an idle man should suffer hunger. There should be a direct link between working and eating. And if you don't do the first, you don't do the latter. Proverbs 19 and verse 15. Slothfulness, that's laziness, slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger. That's the way it used to work before socialism took over the world. Now it's just become just normal to think, oh, somebody else will take care of me. My kids will get free lunches at school because they just should. I mean, why should I have to pay for my children's food? Children should get free food at school, right? Because why not? I'll tell you why not. Why should I be taxed to feed your kids? Let's stop using euphemisms. Why should I be robbed at gunpoint to feed your children? That's a more accurate description than tax. I'm happy and love to be generous and willingly give to people. I don't like it when a gun is put in my ribs and the money is forcibly taken from me. I don't appreciate that. Don't appreciate that at all. Now, having provided her food in the summer, the ant gathers it in the harvest. She prepares in the summer, and then the harvest time comes, and now it's time to bring it all in, lay it up. To gather means to bring things together, to collect from different quarters into one mass or place, to acquire by such means, to amass, also to gather together. In other words, the ant amasses wealth. That's what she does. Now, in her case, it's not precious metals, it's not paper money, it's not stocks, it's not, you know, it's food, in her case. That's her wealth. That's the only thing the little ant needs. The little ant doesn't really need clothing. The little ant doesn't need anything except for an anthill and food. So she amasses wealth. You know what that tells me? There's nothing wrong with amassing wealth. The Bible is literally telling you to amass wealth. That's what it's literally telling you to do. Follow the ant and amass wealth. Not just for the sake of being rich, quote unquote. You know why you want to amass wealth? Because winter's coming and you want to get through the end of winter. That's why you want to amass wealth. That's the whole point. The whole point of becoming a millionaire, if that's your goal, I mean, I hate to tell you, a millionaire is not rich, right? To have $1 million, you are not rich by any stretch. You could blow through $1 million in a heartbeat. A heartbeat. I mean, literally. I mean, you could go on a nice shopping spree for a weekend and blow through $1 million. Literally. I mean, it'd be so easy. Go to a nice car dealership and your $1 million is gone if you buy a few of them. I mean, seriously, you're not rich by any stretch of the imagination, but you are financially independent and you can take care of yourself for the rest of your life if you just live reasonably and wise, right, on $1 million. The ant lays up in the harvest. The harvest is the third of the four seasons of the year, the autumn, the season for reaping and gathering in the ripened grain. Now, notice something here. Provision of food is made in the summer, and gathering of it is done in the harvest. Now, the sluggard can learn from the ant about when in the course of life it's important to work. Okay? You can also learn when in the course of the year. You know, there is the immediate application and the long-term application. Of course, you learn that from the ant, it's you better get planting in the springtime, right, and weeding and watering and all those things. And then, you know, come the end of summertime and harvest, then it's time to harvest. Obviously, that's you know, I don't think that probably even needs to be explained. But the more important lesson here, I think, is the long-term, the more broad lesson. you can look at life as the four seasons: spring, summer, fall, and winter. In the springtime of life, a man is just entering his working years. This would be from the time you're a teenager into your early 20s, probably mid-20s maybe. This is the time to determine what talents, aptitudes, and skills God has given you, and to begin to get an education or to learn a trade to develop these abilities. Okay? Now, if you're smart, you start saving, investing, even in the springtime. You start right away, as soon as you can. You know, 18 years old, you can open up a Roth 401k, do it, and start maxing that thing out. $7,000 a year, you can max that thing out. You do that from the time you're 18, you're going to be a millionaire by the time you're 40. Easily. No problem whatsoever. But I'll get into investing later, like I said. Then you have the summer of life. In the summer of life, a man starts into his career and is in growth mode. During this time, he becomes more knowledgeable and productive and continues to increase his income. This is the time to start saving and investing money and laying up wealth. Right? This is the time to really get busy. So when you start into your career and you really start making some money, that's the time to start saving and investing. Like I said, before that is important too, but this is the time where you can really make some hay. Then you have the autumn, or the harvest. And in the harvest time of life, a man's at the peak of his career. So he's spent, you know, years, decades, perfecting his craft, working his way up. In most cases, most people, when they get to toward the end of their life, toward their 50s, mid, you know, 60s, mid-60s, late-60s, I mean, they're in the peak. They're in the peak earning potential now of their lives. All that work for all those years and decades now is really starting to pay off. Your productive capacity is at its max. And you're still able to work. You're still able to use your talents that you've spent a lifetime acquiring. I mean, most people quit right when they're just really getting started. I mean, they've spent their whole lives really working, and they get to the point where they're actually making some really good money, and they're like, okay, time to quit. It's like, that'd be like running a marathon, getting to the 25th mile and saying, I think I've done enough. If you don't finish, you know, what was the point? Why'd you even run in the first place, right? All the planting and watering and weeding that he's spent years doing is now paying off with a bountiful harvest. He's making the most money of his life, and his expenses should be at the lowest point in his life. Having paid off all his debt, having an empty nest with his children all grown and out of the house. I mean, if you haven't started saving money before that point, you can really start laying it up at that point. Now, you should have done it a long time ago, and interest was on your side, you'd be way ahead. But nevertheless, this would be the time. This would be the time to really start laying it up. Now is the time to reap the reward of a lifetime of labor and work and save as much money as possible while you still can work. And as Jesus taught, it's important to work while it's day, because the night cometh when no man can work. John 9 and verse 11. John 9 and verse 11. It's important to work while it's day, while you can, in other words. Because someday there's going to be a time, there's coming a day when you won't be able to work. That happens for most people. Some people just die, you know, when they are still of working age. You know, I mean, I've known people that, you know, we had a brother in Minneapolis that he was 73, but he was still, you know, he was still running his own business. He could still work. He just died like that. Sometimes that happens, but for most people, it's more of a slow progression. You can do less and less, and eventually you just kind of get to be like, you're just kind of sitting there and you can't do anything anymore because you're just old, you're decrepit. Mind doesn't work, your body doesn't work, whatever. You know, that just usually happens. You get to the point where you just can't work anymore. So you want to work while it's day, while you still can. John 9 and verse 4. I must work the works of him that sent me, Jesus said, while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. Well, then you have the winter time of life. You got springtime when you're young, you got summertime when you're starting to just come into the prime of life, and then you got the harvest time when you're really able to maximize your earning potential. And then comes the winter. Now, the winter doesn't necessarily come at a certain age. some people's winter might come at 60 because they have some debilitating disease and they're done, right? Some people's winter might not come to 80, even 90. There are 90-year-old men out there that continue to work because they just love it. I read about a guy, I forget what book it was in. It was in either one of the Ramsey books or the Millionaire book. I don't remember which one. And this guy was 90 years old and still working. Not because he needed the money, just because he just loved what he was doing. I think he was an architect or something. And he was still designing buildings at 90 years old, going to work every day, just because what else was he going to do? He knew if he retired, he'd die. And I'll get into that later. That's what happens. Not always, but a lot of people, they retire and then they die. Especially men, because they have no purpose after that. Because a lot of men, their purpose in life was really their work. What they did gave them purpose. It gave them meaning. It gave them a reason to get up in the morning. And a lot of times when that ends, they don't last too long. But I'll talk about that later. In the wintertime of life, a man is now beyond his working years. He's old and physically incapable of working. And at this point, he should have a large store of wealth laid up that he can live off of for the rest of his life, so that he doesn't have to be a burden on anyone else. Americans desperately need to hear this message and learn from the wise ant, because the vast majority of Americans have little to nothing saved for retirement. And I'll give you some quotes here. This is from an article from 2018 called Retirement Crisis: The Typical Working American Has Nothing Saved for Retirement. It says, a startling new report issued by the nonprofit National Institute on Retirement Security found that despite the, quote, recovery, this is talking about the recovery after the 2008 meltdown, despite the recovery of the last decade leading to all-time highs in the stock market, the savings levels of Americans who seek to retire are, quote, deeply inadequate, unquote. In fact, the median retirement account balance among working individuals was found to be zero. Zero. That's the median, not the mean or the average. I don't know if you know the difference between average and median. Median is the middle point. So if you take 100 people, the 50th person is the median. So if you have 100, if you look at income spread out over 100 people, where the poor are down here and, you know, in the 0, 1, 2, and the rich are up here at the 99, 100, the middle person is the median income. Now, the average income would be if you took all those incomes and just spread them out evenly among the 100 people, took the average, and whatever each person, you know, on average would make, that's the average. But the median can be different, because a lot of times, especially with wealth, on the one end, these people here have all the wealth, you know, towards the top, and then these people down here don't have very much. So the median might not necessarily be the average, right? The median could be a lot below the average, because if you averaged out all the wealthy people, the poor people would be a lot higher, if that made any sense. So the median person in America has nothing saved for retirement. Now, it probably doesn't take a lot to figure out that if you have nothing saved for retirement, you're not going to be able to stay retired for very long. Like, no time, right? So what is a person that has nothing saved for retirement going to do? He's going to work until the day he dies. That's a fact. Or he's going to work until he can't work, and then he's going to rely on somebody else to take care of him. And I don't think any of us want to do that. The report found that more than 100 million Americans that are of working age don't have any retirement account assets in an employer-sponsored 401k-type plan, individual account, or pension at all. To make matters worse, 4 out of 5 Americans were also found to have less than 1 year's income in their retirement accounts. So 80% of people have less than 1 year of retirement saved up. Even those that are trying to save for retirement are failing to do so effectively, according to the study. It's stated that 77% of Americans come up short of even the most conservative retirement savings targets for their age based on estimates that have them working until age 67. The article continues, Diane Oakley, who authored the report, stated, quote, the facts and data are clear. Retirement is in peril for most working class Americans. When all working individuals are considered, not just the minority with retirement accounts, The typical working American has zero, zilch, nothing save for retirement. She continued, quote, "What this report means is that the American dream of a modest retirement after a lifetime of work now is a middle-class nightmare. Even among workers who have accumulated savings in retirement accounts, the typical worker had a low account balance of $40,000. This is far off track from the savings levels Americans need if they hope to sustain their current standard of living in retirement." Now, I have something very important to talk about for the remainder of the sermon. Very important. I'm not trying to trouble anyone. I'm not trying to stress anyone, but this is very important. I feel that it is my duty to warn you about this. Now, my conclusion that I'm going to give you first is not new. Like I said, I've been saying this for 10 years. I said it in Minnesota on more than one occasion. I said it in 2018 down here. This is nothing new. I said it in the Proverbs Bible Study series when I talked about the ant and when I talked about some other things related to that. This is nothing new. The conclusion, that is. What I'm going to tell you, what I'm going to warn you about, the specifics are new. Actually, the first thing, I don't think I've ever talked about before publicly in the pulpit, anyway. And the first thing that I'm going to talk about is a fact that is going to happen. This is not speculation. This is not, you know, if certain things happen, then this is an absolute fact that is going to happen to every single person. Every single married person, anyway. The second thing will very likely happen if something drastic is not done to stop it. And whatever is done, if they do something to stop it, it's going to be very painful. It's going to cause a lot of problems for a lot of people. So, I mean, there's going to be no easy solution to the second part. But I want to give you a warning about relying on Social Security to provide for you in old age. Middle-aged people and younger people should not even include Social Security in any retirement planning. If you're my age or below, if you're in your 40s or below, if you're getting your spreadsheet out and you're figuring out how much you need to retire and you're looking at your little Social Security website and saying, oh, I'm eligible for X amount of thousand per month, you're crazy. If you want to put in your spreadsheet Social Security for your retirement, put zero. Plan on zero. If there's anything more than that, you'll be happy. You have a little extra to you know, buy yourself a latte or something once a month. But just consider it zero. No Social Security if you're my age or below and probably even several years older. You know, if you're even in your 50s, I wouldn't plan on it. But definitely my age and below, don't plan on it. Assume that you'll get nothing from Social Security. Just make peace with the fact that you have been robbed of thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. You've been robbed and pillaged. It's been given to other people to live off of. You're never going to see a penny of it. Make your peace with it. Don't get bitter about it because it just is. It just is. You've been screwed. That's all there is to it. Now, retired people who are collecting Social Security and relying on it for all or for the majority of their income, as I've said, should keep working or start working as much as they can and saving for as long as they can while they still can. Now, you may think, well, I've got Social Security. Why would I need to keep working and saving? Because you've got Social Security. That's why you need to keep working and saving. And I will make the case here presently. That's, of course, unless you have enough money laid up outside of that to live off of for the rest of your life. If you got that, then you know, don't worry about it. Enjoy yourself. But if you don't, keep working, keep saving. And I've got two reasons for this. Like I said, the first one is a fact. It's going to happen. The second one will probably happen, but the first one's going to happen. And that is, when a spouse of a couple who are living on Social Security dies, the other spouse will lose between 33% and 50% of his or her income. That is an absolute fact. That will happen, period. Every single couple who are on Social Security, when one of the spouses die, you will guaranteed lose between 33% and 50% of your income, period. It will happen. That is the way that Social Security works, and I will explain that. You may not know, you know, people that are on it probably know because they started looking into it. Younger people, probably a lot of wouldn't know because why would they care? But a person has to have worked for the equivalent of 10 years or 40 quarters to collect Social Security. So if you haven't had 40 quarters, if you haven't had 10 years of work over the course of your life, you can't collect. If a wife worked for 10 or more years, she can collect based on the amount that she, quote, contributed. I'm using their terms, contributed. You don't contribute, you know, you forcibly, they rip it out of your hand with a gun to your ribs, right? But you contributed, so to speak. So if a wife worked for 10 or more years, she can collect based on the amount that she contributed to the system. If a wife was a homemaker and did not work outside the home, she can collect half of her husband's Social Security, right? That's how it works, right? So let's consider two different situations. Let's look at situation number one. This is a condition where both spouses worked. And let's assume the best case scenario. Now, I mean best case in the sense of how much you're collecting, not best case life. This is a bad case life scenario, but best case as far as collecting the most that you can. Best case scenario wherein both husband and wife made the exact same amount of money and can therefore collect the same amount of Social Security benefits. So to keep the math easy, let's just assume that both are entitled, right? I'll use their terms. You're entitled. I hate that word. If you tell me I'm entitled to anything, that means I'm some kind of a slave or something like that. The only thing you're entitled to is what you worked for and earned yourself. But anyway, let's just keep the math easy. They're both entitled to collect $2,000 per month. Okay, so husband collects $2,000, wife collects $2,000, because they both worked exactly the same amount, made the exact same amount. Their combined household income is therefore $4,000 per month. Is everybody following me so far, right? Each of them gets $2,000, combined income's $4,000. Okay, this is like a second grade math lesson here. So when either the husband or the wife dies, the other is left with only his or her Social Security benefit and therefore has an income of $2,000 per month, right? If the wife dies, hers is gone. The husband's got his $2,000. If the husband dies, his is gone. She's got her $2,000, right? So they're left with a household income of $2,000 per month, which means that his or her income has just dropped by 50%. His household income has dropped by 50%. It went from $4,000 a month to $2,000 a month. So you've just lost half of your household income when one of you dies. Okay. Now let's look at situation number two. Situation number two, only the husband worked. Okay. And to keep the math easy again, let's assume that the husband's Social Security benefit is $2,000 per month. I just like to keep them nice, even figures. It's really easy to do the math, and it's easy for you to get the math as you're hearing this, right? Since his wife was a homemaker, she can collect half of his Social Security, which is $1,000 per month. Okay? Everybody get it? He gets $2,000, she gets half of his, which is $1,000, and their combined household income is therefore $3,000 per month. Everybody get it? Right? Pretty simple, right? Okay, combined income, $3,000. Everything's going, they're going along, everything's hunky-dory, everything's great, and then the husband has an aneurysm, or he has a heart attack, or he gets killed in a car accident, or whatever. Husband dies, okay? Husband dies, what happens? The wife stops receiving her half of his Social Security and instead receives his whole Social Security benefit, which is $2,000 per month, okay? So she now has a household income of $2,000 per month instead of $3,000 per month. Her household income just dropped by 33%, or $1,000 a month, overnight. Lost 33%, $1,000 a month, overnight when her husband died. What if the wife dies? If the wife dies, the husband is left only with his Social Security benefit, which is $2,000 per month. Her half of his goes away. His household income has just dropped by the same amount, by 33%, by $1,000 a month. He now has $2,000 instead of $3,000 in household income. So, no matter which spouse dies first, the other one is left to make do with $1,000 less income per month than before. And that's huge, I mean, for most people, if you're making that kind of money. If you're making $10,000 a month, $1,000 a month is peanuts, right? It doesn't matter. It wouldn't even change your well, it shouldn't change your standard of living whatsoever because, you know, you don't need nearly that much to live. But when you're making $3,000 a month, $1,000 a month is huge. So no matter the situation, when a spouse dies, the other one is left with between 33% and 50% less money to live on, no matter what the situation. Best case scenario, you lose a third of your income when your spouse dies. Worst case scenario, you lose half of your income when your spouse dies. But at a minimum, you're going to lose a third of your income. Now, the question is, can you live on 33% less income than you are right now? That's the question every retired person needs to ask himself. If I lost 33% of my income, could I still live? Well, here's the answer. Someday, unless you or your spouse die at the exact same time, which is very unlikely, unless you get killed in a car accident or a plane crash, your house blows up or something, unless you get killed at the exact same time, you will be. You will be living on one-third less income than you are right now. That is an absolute fact. It's going to happen, period. So you better plan accordingly. A prudent man foreseeth evil and hideth himself. Proverbs 22. Let's look at that. Proverbs 22 and verse 3. Now, a person could take Proverbs 22:3 and take it too far and say, yes, I've got all these calculations and I've got all these prognostications and I've been following the news and I've been figuring out what's going to happen and I foresee the evil and I'm going to hide myself. Well, maybe that stuff's going to happen. Maybe it's not. But it is no stretch to foresee the evil of a spouse dying. It's going to happen, period. I mean, period. And like I said, unless you both... Only two things could prevent that from happening. Either you both get killed instantaneously at the same time, or Jesus Christ comes back. That's it. Other than that, one spouse is going to die, the other one's going to be left with one-third less income, period. Proverbs 22 and verse 3. A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. I don't want you to pass on and be punished. I haven't wanted you to pass on and be punished for the last 10 years that I've been harping on this same stuff. But given this is a series on money, I figured I better do it at least one more time. And I wanted to give you some this information that I haven't given you in the past. Now, this is not in the outline. This is put in later. I intend to put this in the outline. But given this fact, remember I said at the beginning of the sermon, if you're retired, you need to have $250,000 saved up. Here's why. Given this fact, a retired man should not stop working and saving until he has at least $250,000 saved. And here's the reason. Let's take situation number two, right? That's the best case scenario where you're only losing 33% of your income instead of losing 50% of your income. But let's take situation number two. Husband worked, wife didn't, she collects half of his, right? That $3,000 combined income. He dies, she's got $2,000 left, she's got a third of what she used to. So let's just say, hypothetically, husband dies in his late 60s or early 70s, and he leaves his wife of the same age as a widow. Now, in a lot of cases, the wife's, you know, several years younger, so she could be, you know, even younger yet, so she'd have even more time to live, but let's just say, you know, around the same age. She could still live 10, 15, 20 years. It's nothing for a woman, especially, to live into her late 80s or even early 90s. That happens all the time. I mean, it's not. I'm not saying it happens. Like, it's not. The average woman doesn't live quite that long, but it is not uncommon at all for women to live into their mid or late 80s and even early 90s. I've got two grandmothers living into their 90s, and I've known plenty of women that lived into their mid or late 80s. She now has $1,000 less dollars per month to live on. Now we'll just do some very simple math. That's $12,000 per year less income to live on. In 10 years, which means when she's in her late 70s or early 80s, that's $120,000 of lost income and probably needed income that she doesn't have. She is now $120,000 in the hole. In 20 years, which is in her late 80s or early 90s, that's $240,000 in lost and needed income. That doesn't even factor in inflation. Social Security cost of living adjustments, the COLA adjustments, don't keep up with inflation. They're based on the CPI, which understates inflation by about half. So every year you have less and less income, less and less purchasing power anyway. I'm not even factoring that in. So why did I say $250,000? Well, having $250,000 saved will cover her lost income if she lives for 20 years after her husband dies within a few years of retiring. That would cover it. This assumes that there will be no cuts to Social Security, which brings me to my next point. This assumes that Social Security just continues on like it is right now for the next 20 years. But that brings me to my next point. This is the second reason why retired people, if they don't have enough laid up to take care of them for the rest of their lives, ought to keep working and keep saving for as long as they can, save as much as they can while they can. Because the Social Security Trust Fund will be empty in 8 years from now, in 2033. This is not some tinfoil hat conspiracy website. This is from SSA.gov, the Social Security Administration website. They tell you there, right there, that the trust fund will be empty in 2033. I gave you a link to it. The trust fund provides about 20% of the Social Security payments to current recipients. Here's an article from Forbes. I read a couple of articles on this. I just wanted to give you one. Forbes, Forbes.com, mainstream publication. This is not some crackpot website or something. Social Security's Old Age and Survivor OASI and Disability Insurance DI trust funds are only a supplemental source of Social Security's funding, currently paying for only about 20% of retirement, survivors, and disability benefits. This is from an article called What Will Happen If the Social Security Trust Funds Run Out? This is from last year, from just about 1 year ago, April 20th, 2024. So the trust fund covers about 20% of the payments sent to current payees. The other 80% comes from Social Security taxes paid by suckers like me and millions of other working people. That's where the rest of it comes from. When the trust fund runs dry, under current law, there will be an automatic 23% reduction in Social Security payments to current recipients. Not to future recipients, not to people that are going to retire in 20 years from then, to the people that are collecting it at that moment, when that trust fund runs dry, in 2033, if it does, like projections, under current law, automatic 23% cut to current recipients, to people that are receiving it right now. Here's a quote for you from the Forbes article. Under the current law, benefits to existing retirees and beneficiaries would need to be reduced to the level that could be solely supported by FICA taxes, that's Social Security taxes, paid by current workers at that time. According to the 2023 Social Security Trustees Report, benefits could be reduced by as much as 23% in total. I mean, it's simple. The trust fund makes up 20%. When the trust fund's empty, there's no more money coming from the trust fund, and that means there's only what's coming in from suckers like me, and that means that benefits automatically get reduced, they say, by 23%. Now, to avoid cutting benefits, there are some things that they could do, none of which are going to be good. They could increase the FICA taxes, but that's just going to further impoverish working people, and it would be very unpopular. We already pay like 13% of our income in Social Security taxes. That's not included. That's in addition to income taxes and state taxes and all the other taxes. So if they try to increase FICA taxes, that's not going to be popular at all, right? That's going to be a big burden on people. Or the government could fund it from other sources. The only problem is they don't have any other sources. The government is running $2 trillion deficits every year. They are going in debt $2 trillion. They have no money. They are literally borrowing $2 trillion per year. So if they fund it from other sources, that means they're going to print up the money out of nowhere and give it to Social Security recipients. And that means a lot more inflation. That is literally the definition of inflation when you increase the money supply, and that is precisely what they would do. They just issue government bonds, and the money would be conjured out of thin air and sent to Social Security recipients. And inflation just goes on up. That's what happens. Now, what happens to the people in the above situations? Remember situation one and two? What happens to the people in the above situations if there's an automatic 23% cut when the trust fund is empty? Now, there are other things they could do also. They could also they could raise retirement ages. They could cut benefits. They could, you know, they could do other things to try to shore up the system. But, you know, then they are taking money away from current recipients because they have to do something. All right. So what happens when the trust fund goes empty in 8 years from now, if it does? In situation number one, remember situation number one, this is the couple receiving $4,000 a month. Husband gets $2,000, wife gets $2,000. In that situation, their benefit would be cut by $920 a month, and they would have only $3,080 per month to live on instead of $4,000 a month. So, you know, big chunk, almost $1,000 gone. What about the widow or the widower, though, in situation one? The widow or the widower in situation one receiving $2,000 a month would have his or her benefit cut by $460 per month and would have only $1,540 a month of income. This means the widow or the widower's Social Security income would have dropped from $4,000 a month when his or her spouse was alive to $1,540 a month after the automatic cut took place. And this means that the widow and the widow or the widower would experience a 61.5% reduction in household income. That is 65% reduction in income from when they were both alive before the trust fund ran out to one of them's dead and the trust fund is gone, 61% reduction in household income. Who out there is going to be able to absorb that? That doesn't have, you know, a bunch of money laid up to live off of. Situation number two. This is where the husband worked, wife didn't. She collects half his Social Security. They're making $3,000 together. He brings in $2,000. She brings in $1,000. This couple receiving $3,000 a month from Social Security would have their benefit cut by $690 per month and would only have $2,310 per month of income. Substantial amount, $690. Just take your current income and knock $690 off of it and say, would that change my standard of living? I would think for most people, yes, that would definitely change your standard of living. What about the widow or the widower, though, in situation two, receiving $2,000 per month? He or she would have his or her benefit cut by $460 a month and would have only $1,540 per month of income. This means the widow or widower's Social Security income would have dropped from $3,000 per month when his or her spouse was alive to $1,540 per month after the automatic cut took place. This means that the widow or the widower would experience a 48.7% reduction in household income. Basically, if a couple is collecting Social Security now, in 8 years from now, if one of you is dead, your income from now until then is going to be half. You're going to have half as much income in 8 years from now than you do right now, if the trust fund dries up and they don't print money to the moon and destroy the currency to try to save it, which they might. And that would be an even worse situation, I think, because then it wouldn't just be old people that are struggling. It would be everybody that's struggling. And you'd have, you know, runaway inflation like so many nations have dealt with in the past. The question is, can you live on 48.7% less income than you are right now? Most people making that kind of money are not going to be able to say, oh, yeah, I just take half my income. I'll be fine. I can just live just like I am now. Most people are not going to be able to do that. You know, if you're making six figures, yeah, no big deal. Not when you're making $36,000 a year. someday, if you are a widow or a widower who lives more than 8 years from now, and there's an automatic 23% cut to the Social Security benefits, you will be living on about half of your current income, and you better plan accordingly. A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, as we've seen. We need to prepare our horses for the day of battle and then trust in the Lord to take care of us. Proverbs 21 and verse 31. Yes, trust the Lord, but get that horse prepared. Get the horse prepared. The horse is prepared against the day of battle, but safety is of the Lord. But the Lord still expects the horse to get prepared. So you need to start saving for retirement right now. Doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter if you're an 18-year-old kid. That's the best time to start saving for retirement. Doesn't matter if you're 18, if you're 40, if you're 60, if you're 70, if you're 80. It doesn't matter. If you don't have enough money right now laid up to live on for the rest of your life, start working. Work as much as you can. Save as much as you can. Because I've just showed you, hard times are coming, period. Whether it's just the death of your spouse or whether it's the insolvency of Social Security, which is likely, but definitely the death of your spouse. I mean, hard times or major changes are coming, period. It's going to happen. Unless you happen to both get whacked by a bus at the same time. Here's what Dave Ramsey had to say in the Total Money Makeover, page 54. Just showing you I'm not the only crazy one here. How can I put this delicately? There is no shining knight headed your way on a white horse to save the day. Wake up. This is the real world where sad old people eat Alpo. That's dog food. Please don't be under the illusion that this government, one that is so inept and dim-witted with money, is going to take care of you in your golden years. That's your job. This is an emergency. The house is on fire. You have to save. You have to invest in your future. You won't be fine. Do you get the picture? His words, not mine. We live in the land of plenty, and that has lulled a large percentage of Americans to sleep thinking everything will be, quote, okay, unquote. Things won't be okay unless you make them that way. Your destiny and your dignity are up to you. You are in charge of your retirement. Of course, Dave Ramsey is a Christian professing man, and he would likewise say, of course, you also trust in the Lord for him to provide. But you know what he's also going to tell you? Get the freaking horse ready. Prepare the horse. What if your life, he goes on to say later on in the book, what if your life depended on how you managed your 401k or whether you started your Roth IRA today? Actually, it does. Because the quality of your life at retirement depends on your becoming an expert in money management today. And like I said, this is not exactly rocket science. It's not like to become an expert means you have to become an expert options trader or something like that. No, it's as simple as pay off your debts, stay out of debt, pay off your house in 15 years, put 15% of your gross income in your 401k in mutual stocks or in index funds, or mutual funds or index funds, and I'll talk about those later, and just do that every 2 weeks for the rest of your life, and things will be fine. God being your helper. You know, if you don't have nuclear war or something crazy like that, right? It's not rocket science. It's not rocket science. Go to the anthill, sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Proverbs 6 and verse 6. By doing so, you will learn a good work ethic. By doing so, you will learn how to provide for yourself. And by doing so, you will learn how to make hay while the sun shines and lay up wealth during your working years to live on during your latter years when you can no longer work. So I say again, keep working, keep saving while you can. I realize I'm a broken record. I've been saying this for 10 years, and I'm going to keep saying it probably. And I will leave you with one final quote. This is a short and sweet one. This is by H. Jackson Brown in my favorite little book, Life's Little Instruction Book. He said, don't outlive your money. Don't outlive your money. Next week, we'll pick it up. And I may even get into investing next week. And that'll be an interesting and fun part, I hope. So thank you for your kind and patient attention.